I was in a very famous TV show. And the title, Bojack.
Bojack!
Horseman Project, this is the intro.
Welcome back to Untitled BoJack Horseman Project. This is episode 3, season 3 of BoJack Horseman. My name is Matt Waters. And Ben, you're right here, right now. How are you on these strange days?
I'm good. I'm right here, right now. I am ready to talk about BoJack Horseman.
There you go. I told you I'd get it in.
You did get it in.
So, it's the third season of the show. You know, we're coming off a banger, like a candidate for the best season of the show. I wouldn't say this is in contention, like some really strong individual episodes, but I would say an overall slight downward dip to 2. Ooh, or maybe I'm on an island here. No, you think it's better. Okay, right.
I do think this is better. I think like I think 3, 4, 5 is probably for me the peak of the show.
Okay.
I think 2 is like really, really strong, but I think, yeah, like this is when the show goes from like, yeah, this is like hovering in my top 10 shows on TV to no, this is like pretty consistently in contention for like number one show of the year. Okay. Every single year. And this isn't to say this season 2 is bad. I think, again, it's a top 10 show. In fact, can we find my top 10 shows of 2015? I'm sure it must exist somewhere on the internet.
Of course.
I will look for that in the background whilst we actually talk about the season.
So we'll get into individual character arcs. We'll get into everyone's favourite game of Ben trying to summarise every episode. We will pick our favourite 2 episodes to do a deep dive on. But before we do that, just some little administrative things to acknowledge with this new season. So our opening titles have added a red carpet premiere scene, and in quite a sort of sad one, BoJack's living room over time fills up with Todd's new business, and then it all goes away. And we'll get into why that is later, but it's just like a fun little thing. I love the opening titles changing, not just season to season, but like episode to episode sometimes. We also have a new little set of characters joining us. So the big one is Anna Spanakopita, played by Angela Bassett, who did technically debut last season, but like in one episode, is a big part of this as BoJack's publicist, trying to get him an Oscar. She is doing very good work for an actor of her caliber in a show like this. You know, no offense to BoJack Horseman, but yeah. Love Anna Spanakopita.
Yeah, I think probably the best, I mean, as you said, like, introduced last season, but probably, like, the secret weapon of this season. God, there's a lot of...
There are.
There's a lot of secret weapons this season. Mm-hmm. Like, do I want to throw out Diedrich Bader? Do I want to throw out Abby Jacobson? Do I want to throw out...
Do you want to cannibalize more of my list? Yeah, it's they are picking up... I don't want to be rude to like previous seasons, but like they're kind of picking up better quality recurring and guest characters, like some of which, you know, we have the separate list for the one-offs. But as the show is getting buzz, I think they're landing better people for better roles.
And it becomes like a snowball effect where like all of the good gets in previous season hang around. Like, it's not like this is a season without Chris and Charles, without J.K. Simmons, without Ben Schwartz, without... like Rachel Bloom or like Maria Bamford or like any of these people who have like been in the first 2 seasons. It's just they come in for like one episode and they're giving more weight to like season long characters or like multi-season long characters. Like, yeah, it becomes a really interesting thing by the end when the cast list for each season is just insanely stacked.
Yeah. Or rather than like talk about each one of them, just to like reel them off, yeah. So Anna Spanakopita, Angela Bassett, Princess Carolyn's faithful assistant Judah, played by Diedrich Bader, as you acknowledged. Love this autistic man. Emily, who we will talk about a lot, played by the wonderful Abby Jacobson, this second half of Broad City. Jessica Biel as herself is a recurring character, arguably, or I guess it's a sort of one episode a season kind of thing. Cuddly Whiskers, BoJack Horseman's one-time collaborator, like a weird like legend of sitcoms who tried to make a weird show with BoJack in 2007, played by Jeffrey Wright. He's like a hippy-dippy hamster, and his disturbingly erotic assistant Jill Pill, played by Mara Wilson. Princess Carolyn gets a boyfriend, Ralph Raul Esparza. And kind of similar to Anna Spanakopita, like debuting at the end of last season, but becoming a big character in the next one, Katrina Peanut Butter, Mr. Peanut Butter's first wife. And then I think it was on to Jessica Biel, and then I think it was on to Diane.
Yes, correct. Yes. I don't think there's a secret fourth wife.
Yeah. And even so, he calls Jessica Biel my second and final wife. yes, played by Lake Bell, who I love when she wins. Single episode guest stars, we've got Greg Kinnear as, in quotes, himself. Jorge Garcia, another like lost moment making me laugh, which it probably wouldn't have as much if I weren't rewatching all of Lost,
but also
while
truly,
doing this.
Truly a like, it's like one line to get him in. It's kind of crazy.
So the island's hell, right? Or whatever he says. Fred Savage as Gooba. Tessa Thompson as the bride at the wedding that BoJack wrecks, or one of the brides.
A truly wild ride.
You don't, like, what are you doing here?
I didn't even realise till the credits came up. And it's not like Tessa Thompson, like, she's a year post-Creed at this point. So,
The next one I actually want to save because I don't want to cannibalise my own joke. Dave Franco as Alexi Brosefino. They're kind of the cast of Entourage, right? And, like, he's married to, obviously, Alison Brie in real life, and I feel like they're trying to riff on his 21 Jump Street character a little bit as well. So that one's kind of fun. Candace Bergen as the closer. Weird Al Yankovic as Captain Peanut Butter. Lorraine Bracco as Diana, Mr. Peanut Butter's marriage counsellor.
A wonderful, wonderful reference to The Sopranos.
Uh-huh. I assume she's good in Sopranos because she sure ain't good in this, but you know, it's not for everyone, is it?
She is fantastic in The Sopranos.
Rufus Wainwright as A Drinking Bird and The Obertones. Wiz Khalifa as himself. There are many, many more. We have the returns, as you said, of Jake Johnson, Alan Arkin, Alana Glazer, Ben Schwartz, Kristen Chenoweth. So many people. I feel like, it is exploding with guest stars this season.
Who is your favourite single performance out of all of these guests?
I do really like Greg Kinnear playing Demented Puppet, The Tragedy of King Greg Kinnear, or whatever it is.
King Lear.
That's it, yes. I do really quite like that a lot.
You know who, and this is, like, it's not a funny performance, it's just an incredibly winning romantic lead on the show for like, however long he's in it. Raul Esparza as Ralph Stilton is...
Well, okay, I was doing, like, the one-off. I guess, I lumped him more in the recurring people, so my answer might be different.
including the recurring, I was basically just going, like, all of these guests, the ones who aren't kind of the main five, do you have one? I mean, obviously, Angela Bassett is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love her and I love Judah. Of the ones that are sort of halfway between a guest star and a regular and the guest stars, Raul Esparza is very, very good, like very warm, very charming. He will turn out to be not the nicest person, but for now he is like impossibly charming. Yeah, like his whole, I miss you, I think about you all the time kind of thing, you know. Very good line read. Jessica Biel is so game. It's Jessica Biel, though, is the thing. Yeah. Right. So, what is going on this season? I'm going to break it down into our five main characters. So, the big one, obviously, the guy the show is named after, BoJack. So, Secretariat has released, and it's not only a hit, but he is actually navigating awards season as he tries to win an Oscar. He reflects on the last time he tried to leave horsing around behind him and become a serious actor. Like, he did try this in 2007, and we get a lot of 2007 in this season. And for as much as he is bad with failure, he struggles even more with the idea of success. And obviously everything comes crashing down for him. Sarah Lynn dies on a bender. They go on together and like his whole world is in tatters and he has nothing and no one. We've talked already about how the show is very inside Hollywood kind of thing. Like very much, like for a guy where this is his first gig, it feels like it's from a creative who is like very jaded from working in Hollywood for a long time, but he must have a lot of friends in the industry because like he is laser guided, or you know, I know there's a writer's room as well, and presumably some of these people have done a lot of working on other stuff, but yeah, like all the award show stuff and like, you know, you're you're like the odd one out and only the stars win the awards and you're just sort of there to round it out as the credible name or whatever.
But also he's presumably like lived in, I mean, he's lived in California his entire mm-hmm. life. And so you have to assume growing up in and around show business, you get this weird, jaded, like just experience of doing it, especially if you're not on the inside, if you're not doing a lot of these things, you're, and or even if you're like tangentially engaged in the award season buzz. And that's very much what this season is just so engaged in an outsider who's now kind of on the inside getting to talk about the weirdness of fame, like the first episode with BoJack, like just getting so frustrated about having to do the same interview over and over again. And how I have to imagine, like, basically everyone involved in this show is probably, like, or every celebrity in general, but like especially like if this is your first time, just being wheeled out in front of endless like press outlets all asking, like, so the show's kind of about depression and show business, like how do you feel about that?
yeah, you know, him, like, the whole reason Anna is around and him needing a publicist as well as his agent, and like, you know, like this idea that, like, you know, when we met him, he was this former huge sitcom star who just never got another gig. And then we reveal through the 2007 stuff, he did actually have a second show. It was not a hit, and it probably drove him further into just really struggling. And yeah, like it actually starts to go okay for him. Like not only is, you know, he has the anxiety before the movie actually hits the public, after he's done the film festival circuit, and then, like, you know, at first he's like, I feel awesome, and he tries to celebrate all his fame, but obviously he keeps doing all the things he keeps doing, the horse, he does such terrible things, and then yeah, he really spirals hard. And like, I like that Diane knows this is coming before he does, where it's like, yeah, sometimes when stuff goes well for you, you spiral. And it's like, yeah, he does do that, doesn't he? Because, yeah, like, he's now, like, fielding offers to be in David Pincher's new, like, hit series and do big serious plays and work with Kelsey again on another, like, indie thing. And I really like Anna saying, like, she argues both directions. She's like, this will show you're not just a star, you're an actor. This will show you're not just an actor, you're a star, kind of thing. Where no matter what way you dice it, she's winning, kind of thing.
Yep.
But yeah, like, we do start to see that, because, like, the default mode has been, he's shit, his show was shit, he is bad, everything is bad for him. And this is the season where, like, he kind of gets some wins, and he doesn't deal with that very well either, because he is just haunted by everything. When I say that I think it's slightly less good than two, I think episode for episode it's less good, but, like, the big themes and, like, the journey here and, like, really delving into the meat of the characters is better. So I guess when I, like, think of what the show is, you know, BoJack's journey across all these seasons and everything the characters go through and the big thing that happened to them, kind of thing, and their wins and their losses, a lot of that is coming from this season. And, like, I would say story-wise it's a very good season, but, like, if I'm comparing episode for episode, which we will get into in a bit, I think I just had a slightly less good time than I did in two, where I think just everything sings all the time. And a lot of times, big things happen in this season in episodes that aren't as amazing. I don't know if that's...
I think it's like, it's kind of, the show is more confident this season, and it kind of leads to there are higher highs. And I think if you're not as engaged in all of the kind of like little individual plots, which I think is maybe like, if you're not engaged with the BoJack's awards arc, then it's maybe slightly less interesting than a season of kind of like, I mean, I guess it's kind of this thing of season two is definitely more one and done's, like, obviously there are one and done's in this season, but everything is kind of leading on to the next event, which season two definitely isn't.
It's starting to bleed together a lot more.
Yeah, like, even an episode like the one where BoJack's trying to, like, cancel the newspaper is so plot-forward, where, like, it doesn't really feel like a standalone. It's just the kind of the trappings of the episode are told in this unique way.
And it's kind of tidying up things that happened in other recent episodes and stuff like that,
And but the ones that stick out are the kind of, like, the ones that have a unique point of view and mm-hmm. story structure. But obviously, when you quiz me on the episodes, I will top tackle those.
Yeah. BoJack also does attempt another relationship. You know, like we saw him try with Wanda, and it wasn't for him in the end. He pushed her away. He and Anna have this weird psychosexual dynamic where, like, you know, he discovers that she represents all the major clients at the Oscars, and that's why she always wins Oscars for her clients, because she just represents them all. George Clooney's, Brad Pitt, all the others.
The names this season are so good, because I feel like early on they were very much like, we will throw in like the real celebrity names, and then by this point they're just like, no, they're all of the names are going to be absolutely demented. I need to get up what the Leonardo DiCaprio
is. Yeah, I'm forgetting it as well. It's like DiCapricorn. Oh, Lenana DiCapricorn. Mitt Derman. And then later on, like, on the Oscar board, we could spend 20 minutes on that, and some people have.
Every time it comes up on Twitter and uh-huh. someone posts a picture of the awards board, I have to spend about 10 minutes, like, pouring through it.
I like all the animal puns, like Mark Buffalo, and then it's like Tom Hardy brackets, who is a cat. Well, very good. So, like, she represents all these clients. He catches her with George Clooney's, and he's like, fuck you, you're my publicist and no one else's, or I don't want you, and he fires her. That turns her on, because no one says no to her. She starts jerking him off and telling him he's a star, and then, like, squeezes his dick in an unpleasant way, and he's like, don't ever talk to me like that again. And then they just start banging, and then he's like, hey, what if we were actually going out? It's a journey, and I forget how much we see her again after this season, but she obviously kind of leaves him when he doesn't win the Oscar, and then he does a very bad job of making amends to her.
I think she's in like one episode down the line, like I want to say like season 5 or 6, she comes back.
It feels wrong to suggest this is the end of her, but yeah, it's an interesting one, because like, yeah, he has to really push to get behind these walls, and then she's like, okay. And we see a lot of scenes of them like in bed together, and like, you know, just genuinely, like, he spends all of his time with her, and it doesn't seem like there's a huge amount of like friction between them in the way that there was with Wanda and with Princess Caroline. But maybe that's because she was never fully in this, and like she knew it would go this way, because she does seem to just drop him the second he doesn't get the Oscar. But then, like, obviously with who he is, we sympathize with her, even though, yeah, she dumped him. Yeah, it's all very interesting. And we will get into I'm pretty sure we will get into Sarah Lynn dying in a bit, but we'll see how that goes.
So ahead of talking about the other characters,
he's the big one, so I figure that needs more time than the others, but yeah.
Yes, BoJack Horseman mm-hmm. is an animated show.
It sure is.
And
this is a season with an awards show backdrop.
It is. And so we all know that the preeminent animated awards show are the Annie Awards.
Oh, not the Daytime Emmys?
Not the Daytime Emmys,
Okay.
So BoJack Horseman in season 1 got a grand total of 0 nominations.
Sure is an animated show that's a big hit with critics.
It is. It should have been nominated against shows such as, this was the category in the first season, The Simpsons, Archer, Back to Backspace, Bob's Burgers, Rick and Morty, Mike Tyson Mysteries, and Regular Show.
Mike Tyson Mysteries, okay, yeah.
In the second season, BoJack Horseman gets 1 nomination.
Is it for, like, sound editing?
It is for general audience animated TV/broadcast production, where it's nominated for the season 2 premiere of Brand New Couch.
Sorry, what? Can you, one more time with that category name, please?
Best general audience animated TV/broadcast production.
So, like, the show for normies, are they trying to get at? Like,
the category is also nominating The Simpsons, Bob's Burgers, and Moonbeam City.
So, but then surely The Simpsons is nominated for, like, the big award as well.
This is the big award.
So what the fuck does this mean?
Feature award, and then they have, like, one for kids, and then one for babies, and then this is the one for, like, adults that isn't a feature film.
Right. So they have kids, real little kids, and cartoons for adults, and then they're, like, best overall cartoon.
But they don't have a best overall cartoon. They have, like, feature film and, like, those kind of things.
Right.
But, like, for a few years, you're only allowed to nominate one episode.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, in season 3, they get nominated for 2 awards. One of them is a complete no-brainer. BoJack Horseman, Fish Out of Water is nominated for Best Production in a general audience animated TV show.
And it wins, right?
It loses to Bob's Burgers 100th episode.
Bob's Burgers is a pretty good show.
It's probably too late for Bob's Burgers to be nominated, to be like winning that award. But also, I think like the Emmys and the Annies both had the problem of just being like, yeah, we'll give it to The Simpsons or like something like that. I've looked up the future winners. We will definitely be talking about better episodes of BoJack losing to things such as notoriously memed episodes of very popular shows with very problematic co-creators.
Okay, I will put on my run sheet as a future thing, Ben says what BoJack lost to.
However, it was also nominated for one other award, which was Outstanding Achievement in Voice Acting in an Animated TV Broadcast Production.
Uh-huh.
Can you guess which voice actor got the nomination for season 3?
Abby Jacobson.
Not Abby Jacobson.
Margot Martindale.
Not Margot Martindale.
That was a joke guess, but Angela Bassett.
And not Angela Bassett.
Paul F. Tompkins.
Not Paul F. Tompkins.
Okay, I mean, how many guesses do I get? Like, do I get one more? Or like...
You'll get one more and then I'll just reveal it to you.
Okay. Cedric Yarbrough.
No, it is Alison Brie as Diane.
Oh, all right. I mean, she's good and all, but like...
She's good, but like, if you're nominating a performance in season 3 of BoJack Horseman...
Well, Will Arnett felt too obvious, and then like, yes, you have Angela Bassett, and you have Diedrich Bader, and you... Oh god, even Jeffrey Wright,
I'm not saying that Alison Brie is bad this season, but this is definitely like her big episode is the one where she hangs out with her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a big Diane season. Like, season 1 would make more sense if you're going to give it to Diane. Season 2, when she has like the whole thing of being depressed and going off to a war-torn country, makes more sense. Season 3,
is it because of the abortion episode?
I have to imagine it is 100% because of the abortion episode.
Well, I mean, yeah, so, like, Diane, you know, not a big season with Diane. Like, her arc is she takes this shitty job that she hates while she's writing celebrity tweets, and she is struggling with, am I too good for this, yes or no? And there's a lot of arguing about that and, like, some reveals about some ways she feels about herself and her lifelong struggles. She gets an abortion, which, you know you're in an adult cartoon when you've done your abortion episode. Obviously, abortions are a big thing that happened to many, many women. But I feel like it is, at this point, a bit of a trope in adult animation.
Do they cut the F off of, like, there's no point where you get it not a full fucker to open the episode?
I think it comes back to Ucker and it ends in mother...
Yes, that's what I was thinking. So the one fuck of the season is obviously Todd, but I was wondering whether or not, like...
I think they get away with splitting it up, but I can't remember if she says the F or not. But yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, you know, she also breaks each wrist at some point.
She breaks the same wrist.
Oh, was it the same one? Oh, I thought it was different ones.
No, it's because the same hand, because obviously he's back in the cast in the finale after BoJack knocks her over.
I mean, yeah, like... It is a lot of like more of the same, like her and Mr. Peanut Butter are like having their marriage problems and like she is having her existential career crisis. And like, I don't know if much of it is new information, but like her outright saying that she feels like she annoys all her friends and she gets death threats over the, you know, what happened in season 2 with her like outing a sexual predator. But yeah, I think the whole thing about like, yeah, that she's worried she annoys all her friends and that she's a big asshole and stuff like that. I think that's kind of newish.
Yeah, I think the big issue with Diane is that the two characters that you pair her with are Mr. Peanut Butter or BoJack, and both of them kind of have to be quite like straight roles, quite emotionally charged.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what they're dealing with, whereas like a Mr. Peanut Butter gets to bounce between Diane and Todd, or like they get to balance the kind of like I have to be dramatic versus I get to be comedic, and Diane doesn't get that benefit, especially when her BoJack stuff is pushed way 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 into the corner because she's just doing it. Yeah, exactly. And like she's doing the social media for him, but like there isn't really a big come to the head like Diane BoJack conversation in this season.
They argue at the Oscar party a bit, where she like tells him he's going to want to kill himself and he's going to have run out of people who are going to stop him, which is pretty fucking heavy stuff. But then that one doesn't hang over them. Like, they're friends again, like, almost immediately. Yeah, and like, you know, she has to kind of flip between coddling BoJack and like forgiving him for all his bullshit and like giving him the straight truth. And then she's like the straight man to Mr. Peanut Butter, or she's arguing with him. So like, it's a difficult character because like she is kind of the sad sack, kind of nagging wife. Like, you know, I'm here to ruin everyone's fun, but then she's also like an adult in a room full of children, kind of.
And
thing.
I think it's something that the writers on the show realize, because obviously we're reaching a point where they realize there's not much rope left on the Diana Mr. Peanut Butter relationship.
No, there is not. And he has lost his show. J.D. Salinger declares that it has achieved what it set out to do. So he puts his energy into trying to fix the marriage of Diane. Like, they're doing a lot of therapy speak at each other and very clearly grasping at something that is not long for this world. He also is grappling with his mortality as we meet his brother, Captain Peanut Butter, played by Weird Al, who is like worried he's going to die because he's got an operation, and he turns out to be fine, but like a character that is like relentlessly happy because he's a golden retriever, he's a yellow lab, sorry. It just feels right to call him like the golden retriever boyfriend trope, you know, because he is very much like that. But yeah, he's a yellow lab. But yeah, he's briefly quite sad about that. And, you know, he's investing in the new business with Todd. Like, I feel like Mr. Peanut Butter is like reliably even keel. Like, he's always just getting in, like, everything goes right for him in a slightly annoying way.
It's not a great long tail joke, but it is fantastic when you get to the final episode and you realize how they are going to wrap up the long tail joke that they've been telling all season of Jake Johnson's Oxnard pretending to be Todd convincing Mr. Peanut Butter to buy every single pasta strainer in the world.
Yeah, and then there's a natural disaster oil spill type deal, and only all of their spaghetti strainers and what we'll get into with Todd can save the day.
I really want, like, that kind of, like, long-form joke is the kind of thing that I really want to be in the writer's room for, because there's so many elements from so many disparate plot lines that, like, have to come together for this bit, where it's like, BoJack has to, like, want a mirror poster for the poster image of Secretariat, and, like, they have to introduce, like, killer whales as strippers, and they have to, like, just all of these jokes from every single episode pretty much piling on into just a wonderful
drawing the boxes into their house every time we see them in just random episodes. Like, every like three episodes, like, they will acknowledge out loud that he's got all these spaghetti strainers, and like, yeah, it isn't for anything until it's suddenly for everything.
I don't remember what I need it to, but it's going to pay off in a big way at some point later on.
And it does. And he comes into great success because of this.
Yeah.
Princess Carolyn, however, you know, she triumphantly started the new business and dumped Rutabaga. But like, yeah, it does not go well. Like, she is just barely keeping the agency afloat. Even with the assistance of Judah and him, like, taking salary cuts and all this. Yeah, she loses BoJack as a client because she misses out on a big opportunity. Like, she gambles on trying to get him two jobs and he gets zero jobs. And Rutabaga and Vanessa Gecko beat her, basically. And she has to fold her new agency. However, she meets Ralph. He's very nice. And she then has the epiphany that she should be a manager, not an agent, and she's very insistent these are different jobs. So, like, Princess Carolyn, like, I feel like, similar to Diane, it's like she's just relentlessly sad, but like, she has this like upbeat attitude and charisma that keeps her a little bit more of a fun pocket of the show, even though she's just enduring so much bullshit all the time, normally from men. It feels like she's kind of stuck in this mode for her entire arc of the whole show. Like, it's just career win, career loss, career win, career loss. And like,
and I think I really like both of her episodes this season. Again, like, I think she is the secret kind of like beating heart of this show, and like, best thing that ever happened is truly wonderful. And because it's old acquaintance into best thing that ever happened is like a two-part Princess Carolyn arc, isn't it?
You know, decent season for her, but kind of like a holding pattern in some ways. And then Todd creates a new business with his old friend Emily, who BoJack sleeps with, which creates more tension between those two, and they end up having a huge falling out. And Todd ends the season by coming to terms with the fact that he is asexual. And I vividly remember you, in attempting to talk around this, kind of spoiled it. Well, you didn't spoil it. You didn't tell me what it was. But I remember you saying, when I was watching all this for the very first time, many, many years ago, they give Todd something you don't think anyone else on TV has. And I was like, hmm. And I was like, wow, he sure doesn't sleep with any women, does he? Or men, or anyone. And then I was like, oh, he's asexual, isn't he? And like, they are dropping the hints before it happens. Like, you know, we see in the 2007 flashback stuff that, like, he is very awkward with her. Like, they do, they kiss, and, like, they're going out, and then, like, he jumps out the window instead of sleeping with her, and then, like, BoJack tries to push him to sleep with her at the wedding, and he makes a million excuses not to, and he would rather, like, make a blanket fort with her than have sex in a hotel room. Just all these things. And yeah, like, it's cool. It's cool representation, and like, they will delve into this a lot more and like what it truly means in future seasons. And like, you know, we've seen a lot of like gay characters, or, you know, just queer characters in general. But yeah, asexuality is underrepresented. And like, it's funny because I feel like all we ever talk about is Gen Z or Zoomers or whatever, like, being like so averse to sex in a kind of annoying way, and like, yet this is doing an asexual story going forward that like is really nicely handled.
I think the issue with the Gen Z thing kind of comes from there's like a weird conservative point of view to it, and then there's also like the fact that we kind of hit this point of movies aren't horny, but like, mm-hmm. the big TV shows are all kind of like aggressively, excessively horny.
Yeah.
So like, if you're going to watch Game of Thrones or something, you're going to see a whole lot of kind of like pointless sexuality.
Well, it's this argument. It's the like, I don't feel that sex advances the plot. And it's like, okay, how does like 80% of what happens in a movie advance the plot?
Yeah,
and this desire to like mainline a show to know what happens, and like having skip lists and watching stuff on 1.5 speed and all this annoying weird stuff you can't believe they do, but they do.
But yeah, I think it's just more like, I think there is definitely a sense of, I just don't like it when people like there's a difference between, we're on HBO, so we need to have a scene in an orgy, mm-hmm. just to kind of like make you feel like your HBO package is coming in, versus two characters having sex as a way to show you what their emotional like point of view is. And I think BoJack is very good at that, where the sex in this season, like, obviously it's not titillating or anything like that in the way that the sex is portrayed, but like the sexual dynamic between Anna and BoJack is a way to tell the storyline between these two characters in an interesting way. And just Todd being asexual allows them to tell another dimension to stories with a sexual bent, in terms of like Emily's disappointment and Emily turning that into sleeping with BoJack because she feels rejected, and BoJack would probably sleep with anyone if they like came over and came over him in the right way.
It's validation for him. Like, it's someone wants me for a second. And yeah, like, to like delve into Emily, like, Abby Jacobson is an excellent voice actress. I actually have not seen her, I don't think, in anything in live action. I know I need to watch Broad City, but like, I know her from animation, like from this, from Disenchantment, from Mitchell's vs. the Machines. Yeah, and she's really, really good. There is a like cadence and pattern to the way she talks that fits these kind of this like new wave of like quirky animation. She goes on these quite long over-explained rants, and she has them here, and like, you know, her explaining, oh, your 2007 show is like my favorite show ever because it was so bad. You have to understand, this isn't from a place of emotional sincerity. I love that it's bad, and I'm basically in love with you. And just her like getting into these really long, she's so good in the 2007 episode of like playing that teenage girl. I was like, oh, I heard you like Kimber, and like, you know, I'm not allowed to date because of my dad. And I don't know, she's just really, really good at playing these kind of all age characters. And Emily is this surprisingly large character on the show when it seems like she's just going to be a throwaway. Oh, Todd had a girlfriend in 2007, and then like, oh, back she comes to drive another wedge between Todd and BoJack, and Todd like fucking lays into BoJack with, you know, they name the episode after it, It's You, where he basically says, look, you are the things that you do. It's not what happened to you making you do this. Like, you are you, and you can't just keep doing shit things and feeling bad. You have to, like, actually try to be better. And, like, that's, you know, I think we talked about something like that in a previous season. It's like, that's the whole show.
This is the first season of, like, a main character breaking off with BoJack. Like, yeah. After this point, they have scenes together. They see each other every so often. But, like,
yeah.
But it's interesting having rewatched the show. Like, obviously, Todd is always there, and Todd and BoJack have a storyline every so often. But, like, Todd really does, like, almost exclusively from a certain point in season, like late season one, move on to being like with Mr. Peanut Butter, really.
Yeah, it's like putting the idiots, like, that together, which I get the impulse, but yeah, he, like, has very much ended his ongoing relationship with BoJack, which is, like, I remember, you know, we were talking about how you were convinced that was coming last season, and then they make up, and, like, there's, you know, BoJack to call him, like, his best friend, and then for us to get to this point, and, like, yeah, BoJack doesn't even understand what he did and why it's wrong, really, and he's almost, like, I think he even says while he's drunk, well, like, if you're not going to sleep with her, kind of thing, then what's the problem with me sleeping with her? And, like, I also like that Todd knows something happened, but they play it in a way where you think he knows everything, and then when he's like, oh, so you know about me sleeping with her, he's like, you slept with her? Like, just classic Todd.
The writers on this show are just so impressive. Like, I mean, I've obviously already mentioned, like, the long tail on the pasta strain a bit is obviously, like, I just can't get my head around, like, do you build that joke first and then you structure the entire season to building up to this point?
I assume so, yeah.
Because there's just so many things in it where, like, boy, that's, like, weird to come to your, like, first point. But the ways in which they manage to write to the guest characters, like, obviously by this point they know how Amy Sedaris is, and so they're able to write the long tongue twisters into the season for her. But, like, they do something for Diedrich Bader, like, that's kind of, like, perfect use of his voice, and
I'm sorry for becoming emotional.
And, like, they get to do Abby Jacobson doing those, like, long run-on rambling stories, and it's like, how do you like, are you casting this show with an eye to getting these people and they're just, like, kind of perfect,
just assume, you know, given they get both halves of Broad City in the room, I assume they just were fans of that show and knew their voices.
Yeah, but it is just really impressive. And then the other thing that's just so impressive about the writing of this show is they don't really tend to let things overstay their welcome. Like, they're very emotionally in tune with where their characters actually are, and so characters will reach a conclusion point with seasons left on the show. Like, for a 6-season show to have that awareness, like, there's no will they, won't they, there's no tension or drama. They just kind of go, oh, no, this is now a relationship that is done, and the rest of the show will go on without this.
Yeah, they're fine with, like, killing their darlings and, like, not, you know, so many shows are guilty of, like, well, we have to just continue because we're a successful thing and we have to keep the thing going. Like, you know, Lost and How I Met Your Mother, and these shows that have a very defined mission statement that they kind of have to drag out as long as humanly possible because they're hit shows.
That's the thing, is like both, like, Lost was more fighting for an ending than How I Met Your Mother, but both of them are examples of, like, why this is bad, because you end up with, like, long stretches of not really doing anything that, like, that really helps. And even in the case of How I Met Mother, going on too long where the original ending that you had written doesn't work anymore with the show that you're making. Whereas I think BoJack is, like, it's still an improv show. I don't think that any of the writers have come to the table with, like, we envision this being X many seasons and each season will be the dissolution of this relationship, or, like, we're going to end up here. But, like, just as they're writing the season, you can tell that they know when things have gone too far for certain characters, and it's really refreshing to watch a show, especially on Netflix, because it and like,
just a different time, isn't it?
That's things like, this is kind of the, I think, like, season 4 is probably the last year of Netflix being the Netflix that everyone wanted them to be. Like, is that kind of like 2014 to 13 to 17 is the peak era of, like, everyone being like, yep, and Netflix is, like, the golden child, everything is going golden for them. And like, I mean, I was looking at what shows were airing 2016, 2017, and this is when, like, American Vandal and the OA and, like, a lot of shows that are, like, their first kind of gutting cancellations are coming. Mm-hmm. And, like, The Defenders is 2017.
I knew you were going to pin this on Iron Fist somehow, somewhere.
I'm not saying I'm pinning it on Iron Fist, but I'm saying I do think The Defenders is kind a point of, like, and this is the end of a, like, era of Netflix. Like, from this point onwards, Netflix is a different beast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the buzz around Daredevil and Jessica Jones, and then you look at, like, nobody giving a shit about latter day Netflix Marvel stuff. Okay, so you've had a fair amount of ability to slightly remember what happens in each episode. We're going to play our favourite game of Does Ben Remember What Happens in Each Episode? And I'm going to sprinkle in my favourite joke from each episode as you name them. So, as always, don't need the entire plot, just a single sentence summary as best you can. Start spreading the news.
Right, this is BoJack in New York doing the press tour for Secretariat.
Yeah. I really like the big convoluted conference call with Todd and Mr. Peanut Butter. You know, they're all just confusing who they're talking to.
Why are you in New York? I'm not in New York. I'm in LA.
I'm in New York. the BoJack Horseman show.
The 2007 flashback, which I think I texted you in the middle of and just went, like, it's so wild that a show is able to be, like, even just 9 years later, able to pin such specificity into, like, how 2007 felt.
Like how Mr. Peanut Butter is dressed and, like, yeah, yeah, also good. Michael Vick made me a very strange offer. It's a great, like, really morbid, but really good. With Mr. Peanut Butter being a dog, you know. Yeah, good. Good stuff. BoJack kills.
Oh, God. This is the kind of, like, the weird murder mystery one where BoJack's a heroin brand, I think. And, like, they go to Cuddly Whisker's house and they find a dead orca in the water, which is very weird.
Yeah. Yeah. We also learn from this season that none of the underwater creatures can swim. It seems so. Just like BoJack singularly possesses the power of swimming. I really like, Jesus, Jill, and you thought your play sucked. I didn't. Like, just really, really, really rude. Fish out of water.
Fish out of water is, I mean, we'll probably talk about this more later. BoJack takes place in a silent episode, essentially, where he fails to get to a film festival screening of his movie, but has fun with a little baby seahorse.
It does. I like that they talk about BoJack really offending the French, and then it turns out it was by criticizing Sartre. Yeah, just a good fake out. Love and or marriage.
What does happen in this one?
We've done it.
this is the Dave Franco episode?
It is.
I can't remember anything else from this episode other than Diane does drugs with Dave Franco and then breaks her wrist. Like,
this is the wedding episode.
Where... Oh, this is the one with Tessa Thompson and they meet Emily again. Okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, we've done it. Okay, cool. We got there. I really like Mr. Peanut Butter not knowing what Bones is about, and this is where you have Emily Deschanel as Bones. I don't think that show is about what you think it's about.
But then it turns out it is exactly what Mr. Peanut Butter
it
thinks
is
it's about.
In this world. Brap, brap, pew, pew.
The abortion episode where they recast Sixtina Aquafina.
They do. Aisha Tyler's gone.
Aisha Tyler's gone. Which feels like, again, I know there's another big recasting coming later on, which is probably going to be more personal to us after, as Watchmen fans.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, a weird kind of, like, look, like, to have Sixtina Aquafina as, like, the focal point of an episode, but, like, fail to get Aisha Tyler back is weird. But yeah, this is, Diane gets an abortion, and it ends up being, like, a turned into a pop star's career.
Yeah, she accidentally tweets the thing she's saying, and she tells BoJack, I'm getting an abortion, and then she accidentally tweets that from Sixtina Aquafina's account, and then she turns out being the face of the pro-choice movement, and she has a fake abortion on live TV, and then she gets pregnant and she wants to keep it. It's all very, like, ugh. Possibly my favorite line in the entire show: we've assembled a diverse panel of white men in bow ties. Just, yeah,
that's a picture that comes out frequently when people, yeah, are talking about stuff, like, just even in 2006, like, just, yeah, massively skewering exactly where we still are, yeah, 7 years later.
And I was like, I don't know, I don't remember the Bible, maybe? Thank you for clarifying. Stop the presses.
Candace Bergman just like scoring buckets like repeatedly. Like, she's so good in this episode. I did misremember that I thought the joke was that the LA Gazette only had one subscriber left and they were basically trying to keep BoJack in for...
Yeah, that would make sense. It wasn't good intimate, like seeing your mum cry. It was bad intimate, like when your dad writes a poem about Lena Horne's nipples and makes you read it out loud. Old acquaintance.
This is this one's two stories, isn't it? So this is Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter on the Labrador Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also the thing that I really like about this episode, and like, because we're not going to talk about this later, is the way the episode opens with Rutabaga and Vanessa Gecko, and they go like, we've only got so much time to like save the agency, but remember, we're the good guys here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go throughout the entire episode and it feels like Princess Carolyn's going to win in her efforts to save the agency. Mm-hmm. And then the end of the episode is like, nope, like Rutabaga and Vanessa are actually the good guys in this case, because not representing BoJack Horseman ultimately.
That's true. And if the underhanded tactic is revealing you did a shitty thing, it's like, is it actually underhanded?
It's just this fun like playing with perspective where like you'd think this episode is about how Princess Carolyn succeeds, and instead it's about the shitty things she did in her past. Also, very much appreciate like David Pincher seeing as he is like the face of Netflix at this point. Where, like,
yeah,
the entire look of all of television is David Fincher's direction of House of Cards.
Yeah,
very weird.
Yeah. Not a great one for like one-liners, but I do really like Mr. Peanut Butter calling men an untapped market in their rideshare business aimed at creating safe spaces for women. Like, and just that entire like cadabra, like just slowly becoming a horror show after starting out as a thing where it's like, why doesn't this exist?
But it's like this ultimate like capitalistic nightmare where it's like, we start off with a really good idea, but there's a ceiling on this idea, so we need to expand into other markets, which include men and making men be sexually attracted to their drivers.
Uh-huh. Best thing that ever happened.
Is this the closest that BoJack would get to a bottle episode? BoJack and Carolyn have dinner at BoJack's restaurant, but accidentally like pisses off the chef so badly that he quits. I adore the end of episode joke where they reveal the food critic is just a Tumblr blogger.
Yeah, yeah. We can have that as the joke. Yeah, and like another one where it's like, it's funny, but like, yeah. Paul F. Tompkins' Italian accent that is like so offensively stereotypical, it loops back around to being kind of funny. Like, I don't know. It's You.
The Oscar episode, the one in which BoJack thinks he gets nominated for an Oscar, but it's all because Mr. Peanut Butter and Todd rewrote the entire nomination list and put BoJack on.
I throw a dart at the board. I mean, black people crossed out is pretty good.
We need to nominate Daniel Day-Lewis for something.
And sound editing.
I also like the kind of, like, this is the one where they call back to the beginning where, like, BoJack drives the Tesla into the pool and you get the recreation of the opening credit shot. Like, wonderful, love it. And also, like, you can see how far the animation has come on in the show when you compare the opening credits to this shot in particular.
Yeah, that's too much, man.
BoJack and Sarah Lynn go on a massive, massive, massive bender that lasts several months. Like, it basically goes from, like, nomination day to, like, post-Oscars are presented.
Mm-hmm.
So like a month and a half or like 2 months or something along those lines. Yeah, just, we will talk about this one in a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why, it just really tickles me. They have the drinking bird that says, my head going down, head coming up, head going down, head coming up. And that went well, our season finale.
Kind of a bog standard, like, let's bring everything back together kind of episode. I mean, as I said, it's the payoff to the season-long joke about the pasta strainers. There's, like, the Sarah Lynn bit where Sarah Lynn thinks BoJack's coming around to, like, just be a friend to her, and instead he's coming around looking for her to have a job. Todd comes out as asexual. Princess Carolyn goes on a date with Ralph Stilton. We get the tease of a young teenage girl called Princess Carolyn looking for BoJack.
Yep.
BoJack. Put a pin in that for next season. BoJack shoots like half an episode of Ethan around, and then proceeds to like run off set when the young girl who they've hired is like, I want to be like you. And he just...
Immediately after Sarah Lynn died.
Yeah, and you just cannot absolutely deal with that. And
he loves to run away.
Do you know? Right, okay. You know what really fucking sucks?
What?
You have this season, And the show ends with this like absolutely gorgeous kind of like final moments of BoJack driving off to the desert, and what's the song playing in the background? Nina Simone Stars. Yeah, Nina Simone Stars is playing in the background as BoJack like takes his hands off the steering wheel and it looks like he's going to commit suicide, yeah. And then like he sees the horses running through the desert, and it's this beautiful, beautiful moment. And the Netflix like cut Stars out. Yeah, and then start season four with like jingly jangly like BoJack music. I'm like,
and there's like there's a couple of bespoke ending credit songs. This like the 2007 episode I feel like has one, and maybe the BoJack Horseman show has one. I can't remember, but yeah, there's a couple where like you only get to hear about 4 seconds of it. Sucks. You help with one natural disaster and everybody loves you, unless you're Sean Penn. Just mwah, right. Oh,
killed me.
Yeah, thank you. Right, you did very well. You stumbled for the very first time, but you're doing better than I think 99% of people could do. And once again, we promise he's not taking notes. So
I have no paper in front of me right now.
No, you never do. I don't know how you live this way. So that's all of them in a sort of zoomed out way. We've talked about arcs. We don't have the time to talk about every one of them in detail, but we are going to pick our favorite ones each. I have a very confident idea about what your one is going to be.
If you don't pick it,
I won't. So if you want to talk about it, you have to pick
it. Is it Fish Out of Water?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Fish Out of Water is so wonderful.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore Fish Out of Water. Yeah. It is like one of those perfect like long tail joke episodes. Like I love the conclusion to the episode of BoJack realizing he could talk the entire fucking time. It's such a kind of like loving tribute to old timey animation. Like it's got elements of kind of like old Fleischer cartoons. It's got elements of like Charlie Chaplin and like slapstick. It is just, this is to me the show fully coming into the confidence to like do this kind of thing. I love how much of it is playing out in the backgrounds, like BoJack Horseman doing the thumbs up and like that becoming everyone just fucking hating him in this like underwater area. And yeah, it's just like I get the feeling that you're not
I like it. It's just I have two I like more, so. And I know this is like, we can't not talk about this one, so I just sort of was like thinking, right, what do I want the second episode to be? Because I just assumed you would pick this. I do really like it. I just think I would have it at number three. I respect the hell out of what they're doing here. Like, a dialogue-less episode is a difficult thing to do, but always memorable. Like, you know, we talk all the time about Hush from Buffy being like one of the most memorable episodes of television in the last like 30 years, and how we wish more TV shows would do special episodes like this. And for them to commit so hard to it, as like, we just see so many innocuous interactions with like, you know, the director from Secretariat is there chatting up to the press, and like, we don't have a fucking clue what any of them are saying, and they hold it for a really long time, and they're not afraid to hold any of these conversations. Like, there are a few where it's like, okay, we get to the quickest possible resolution of like, he doesn't understand them, he shrugs, he tries to mime it to them. But to do conversations like that and have him just sitting there like uncomfortable because he doesn't know if they're making fun of him or not, and they clearly are, but
yeah. And they get so much like so much stuff out of like the water, like him coming to the room with the gift basket and like
he can't eat anything,
can't drink anything, everything in the taffy factory is wonderful, including the payoff to like BoJack just realizes he can swim and so proceeds to swim away at the end.
He's like Superman to these people.
Bit where like he comes out from the like stealing from the shark guy and like stands in front of the Mr. Peanut Butter.
Oh, the callback to like in the 2007 episode, he books a gig like as the spokesman of seahorse milk, and he's like, I don't know. And then we see the like the very like stereotypical, like it's like when you see celebrities do commercials in Japan kind of thing. And like, I think the whole episode is based on Lost in Translation anyway. So yeah, to see the commercial on the TV and then to also see the standee. Very, very good.
I love that, like, he's above water but still can't speak above water.
Yeah.
Like, because he's not wearing underwater. Oh, God. Just, yeah, like, lots and lots of things. And then at the end when he gets the nicotine patch and then the alcohol, like...
The suppository.
Suppository.
and, you know, all the stuff with the, you know, male seahorses give birth. And, like, I assume they're going for a seahorses and horses feel kinship kind of thing. Like, they're all horses here. And him, you know, obviously BoJack, the last thing he wants in the entire world is to be a dad because of his parents and just, you know, everything. And he, you know, he genuinely bonds with this kid. And then once he's gone on this ridiculously arduous journey to get it back to the dad. It's just absorbed into the herd, and he can't even pick out the one that he spent the day with to say goodbye to it. It's just like, oof. Like, you found a way to make this sad. The whole thing is, it has a just gloss of sadness. And, like, the music is so, so fucking good in that episode. Like, you know, I don't know if that would be, like, a dream or a nightmare for a composer to be told, we're doing a silent episode, you have to score literally every second of this. Like, I mean, you get more freedom, but then it's also like, God, I have to write like so much more music than normal.
Yeah, I think Jesse Novak's the composer of the show, and like more than up to the task of like doing this.
Yeah, like it's all over the place. So you get kind of like excited music and happy music and sad music and like, you know, mishaps music, and yeah, like the whole thing. I think just sort of having the blue color tone on it and no one speaking and the music, you know, being so affecting, like it gives it this big gloss of sadness throughout, just amplifying BoJack's like loneliness all the time. And of course, like him, you know, he feels so bad about fucking Kelsey over, and she's at the show as well, and he's desperately trying to get a letter to her, and he writes some of the worst letters in the world, like, sucks that happened to you, we're cool, right? And then he tries to write a heartfelt letter and it just washes away.
Yep. And then obviously the guy comes along and says, like, oh, he's got the button on the machine. Oh,
yeah, just... he could have been talking the whole time. And does he go, mother? And then, like...
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
What are your two episodes, then, that you're talking to? So, I assume one of them is obviously That's Too Much Man.
I mean, that's the one I feel like we have to talk about. I kind of really wish there was a world where we could talk about Best Thing That Ever Happened as well. But, like, it should be... Just to say, I really like that episode. I really like... all the chaos with like the staff getting sudden promotions and them just really delving into their relationship. And like, we learn so much casually in this season about, like, you know, from the 2007 episode, how a lot of them met, and like the history of BoJack and Princess Carolyn as a couple, just casually throwing stuff out. Like, he didn't just bang her all the time. Like, they went on holiday together and he went to her dad's funeral with her, and yeah. All good stuff.
I love the like the way that they drop the 2007 like flashbacks every so often throughout the season as well. Like, we're not done with 2007 after the 2007 episode, like, because the dinner episode opens with the first time they sleep together, doesn't it?
Yes.
And then we get like another one in. And obviously, there's another 2007 flashback in the finale for the Let's Get Sarah Lynn's cameo. So it's just like the little seedings throughout the season to make it kind of like feel like a holistic season.
That the 90s. Were like so formative for him because of Horsin' Around, but then 2007 is also this like incredibly crucial year for all of them. And yeah, just like that she keeps going back to him whenever he needs someone. Like, I don't know if this is true, that she's like the last one to kind of break away from him, but it feels like she is the one that she's been dealing with him the longest, and she's the one that like just can't help but try and be there for him. And like, we'll see Todd and Diane, and I don't know if Mr. Peanut Butter ever like really is that invested that he would break off from him, but it feels like she's the one that will stay with him.
I feel like even when they break away, it's always in a professional point of view where like even at this point when they're trying to build a friendship, like they've had the like they've done the breakup, like there's no way they're ever going to get to the level of perceived closeness that they had before the show even began.
Absolutely.
But one of the most fascinating relationships in the show.
Yeah. But we simply have to talk about That's Too Much Man is the thing. And like, I may even enjoy it less than Best Thing That Ever Happened, but just it's so important to the whole show that we kind of have to. And like, yeah, it's like we briefly got a tease of Sarah Lynn in an earlier episode where she said that she'd been sober for like 3 months or something like that. And she did, you know, they did make a joke of it, of like, she heard that when you take drugs again after not for a long time, the high is really good. But they really go hard on the idea that BoJack did this to her. That, you know, he's gotten the news that he didn't get the Oscar nomination after all. And Anna has left him and he's argued with everyone. And he's dumped Princess Carolyn as a client and everything. So he just wants to get fucked up. And, you know, she's more than game to go along with him. And it feels like it's hearkening back to the big drug episode in season one where, like, they're missing time and stuff like that because he keeps blacking out between scenes, which they will play for innocent comedy, like, you know, punchlines, like, half a punchline, or, like, he blacks out on Anna's story, like, 4 times.
I mean, that's kind of the thing with the show is so good at knowing how to balance the drama and the comedy.
Yeah.
And like, this episode is so tragic, but it's also frequently very, very funny. And like, yeah, it's just, it's such a flex of tone. And even if it isn't as much of a flex in animation as the season one episode is, I think it is way more impressive as like a singular episode, just in terms of like structure and what it actually means for the show. Because like, yes, the show kind of like retroactively kind of goes like, the Penny thing is the worst thing that BoJack ever did.
Yeah.
But this is...
Well, it's kind of amplifying the worst thing he ever did. And like adding to it, like by... Like he told a reporter in episode one, like he told her everything. Well, he kind of alluded to it because he doesn't use names. He's like, I don't know if I would have done it and stuff like that. And then Anna makes it go away. But this time, while he's drunk, he's like, yeah, that's her real name. I don't care. Look her up. And like, he just tells all about it and they're all so shocked. And then Sarah Lynn like gets over it and is like, hey, we've all done fucked up stuff. And then like she drags him to an AA meeting and like he feels the need to one up all their sad drunk stories. And then she tells him about making amends and how like your life is great. You just say sorry and they forgive you and you just carry on. And you know, she will have her breakdown and say how she likes nothing about herself. But he does attempt to systematically go through all the characters and apologize to people. And it just goes badly. Like they break into Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane's house and just wreck their kitchen and shit. And like, they're surprisingly chill about it and just let them run off.
Yeah. They break Diane's wrist. They like start yelling at Princess Carolyn's apartment when she's there with Ralph.
And she just sighs and goes, because she's had more of these than anyone. Like we've seen it in a previous episode where he was just on her lawn, just yelling. And the quietly fucked up one is him just approaching a small child called Todd that he thinks is Todd, and he questions if he's even into girls one episode before we get that reveal. And the parents being like, do you think he's into our child in an inappropriate way? And then they try and leverage that. It's like, this could be our big break.
But yeah, like the just it's so well done, like, because the blackouts are all, like, again, they're played for comedy at first. And even near the end, they're played for comedy. But obviously, like, the whole point of this is that it ends with BoJack driving to Ohio to see Penny. And...
Or as he keeps thinking, Ohio.
Ohio.
with a J, with a silent J. Yeah, like, whenever he comes to, he knows it's a bad idea and he tries to stop it because, yeah, like, Sarah Lynn Googled Penny, found out where she goes to college, they drive there. They stalk her in a library, they stalk her in a cafe, and each time he's like, whoa, whoa, this is bad, we need to go. And that is the correct instinct. And, like, she does seem to be well-adjusted and getting on okay, and then that almost bothers him. And then, like, when he feels relieved that actually she's okay, he accidentally reveals himself, and she obviously is triggered and like, yeah, huge. And then, you know, obviously because they're famous, everyone starts taking their picture, and her just sinking into the background and being lost among these people who are taking their picture while he like calls out to her is like,
yeah,
like you can just perfectly crystallize a handful of moments in this show. Like when you're thinking towards the end of the stuff that haunts him, and like that is a big one for me, is not so much like the episode where he did all of this, but like her react when he sees her again
it's Sarah Lynn kind of going like, oh, she seemed like she was doing fine with it, but then you showing up kind of like made all that trauma.
It's almost like you destroyed her life twice. And she says, hey, you were a father figure who was sexually inappropriate to me, and I turned out fine. Just, yeah, it's so well done. And like the lighting on Penny's face as well, like they kind of force a shadow or force a spotlight even like, with how they do it. And like, yeah, as you said, like the show has subtly visually leveled up so much.
The planetarium scene is terrific. Mm-hmm. Like the stuff with when BoJack goes to like the flashback in 2007 and the whole room is like shaking because of like where he's gotten high at that point, and like he's like fallen off the sofa and all the rest of it. Like it's the confidence to it. I mean, even like, I mean, so much is bittersweet as well. Like Sarah Lynn learning that she won an Oscar that she completely forgot that she was nominated about.
That was BoJack's entire season arc, and she didn't even give a shit. And that, like, you know, they make it clear in the next episode that like she reaches a height of fame way beyond him. And he is presented as the famous one who struggles to be famous and stuff like that, but she's got her own, you know, and she breaks down about very similar things to him, and she obviously doesn't survive this experience and he does. They even give you like, they fake out the death before they do it, where like she's just bored and not talking, and then she's like, what? And then Yeah, at the planetarium. For her to just go while he's talking and then go to end credits is... That's not how I remembered it, but it's very powerful. I thought they explicitly showed you how that went down, but we'll find that out next season.
Yeah, it's they do it again. They do it again in the next episode as well when they announce the death, because obviously, like, you can read it as her not dying, but just, I mean, what, the fade to black and then the final Sarah Lynn is... Yeah, like really tragic. Kristen Schaal is truly incredible in this show.
Yeah, like she's got the reputation of just having this sort of wacky child voice and like a weird adult voice, but like she's got the acting chops big time.
I think she's way better suited to animation than she is to live action. Mm-hmm. And like when I see her in live action, like she's fun, but she's so big and broad in a way that suits animation so much better. Like her 30 Rock character is such a big part of those later seasons. I'm not a huge fan of it. I'm not a huge fan of like her role in Last Man on Earth, which was the show she did for several years. Like it's just she is so much better with like on Bob's Burgers and on this, and even in stuff like her role in the Toy Story movies and stuff like that. Like they're just a voice made for voice acting.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And it's sad that kind of there's not much more Sarah Lynn over the show, like, because she's been kind of like this constant presence. Like she's in the first episode and obviously like will make two or three appearances per season,
and like for her last, it's not her last thing, because you said there's going to be a couple of flashbacks and stuff and
the season six
sequences and stuff, but like for them to go from her dying, and like they don't even confirm she's dead until after, but the scene where like he has come hat in hand to ask her to save his show, and the idea that last sincere connection she was holding on to while everyone around her wants a piece of her. And then even he is like, oh, can you please come and help me with my TV show? And then that like, it seems like she's not doing all the drugs at that point of her career. And then she sure does do all the drugs after that. And it's like, I don't know if they're one-to-one saying it's BoJack's fault that she ended up the way she did. But, and then to like cut, like the sadness from her, like, oh, okay. And then to cut to the announcement, she's dead. Like, big character. Our first sort of major character death. I mean, Herb died, but like Herb never felt like
Herb shows up late, and it feels.
And like we know he's got cancer when we meet him and stuff.
And it's a relationship that is done. Like he's the first like knife. It's like, but like Sarah Lynn is the first like gut punch.
I feel
like,
yeah, absolutely. Okay, so those are our two, and personally, I would go 2-3-1. I think you're going 3-2-1.
I am going 3-2-1. I mean, I'm looking at my list. I gave it number 11 on my 2016 Best of TV list.
Yeah.
A really good year of TV, although I probably wouldn't have a show such as Horace and Pete in my top 10 anymore, considering where Louis C.K. is. I mean, I think the next two seasons are kind of the show really, really cresting. I mean, next season in particular, I think, is, I think, universally kind of seen as kind of BoJack. Really doing something kind of incredible. But obviously we'll get to talk about that next time, but I just remember the wait between season three and season four, especially because like this is the year where I kind of like begin to cut down on TV viewing.
When I met you, your TV viewing was fucking insane.
Yes, I mean, like, I mean, I've got like, I was watching probably on average like 100 shows every single year. Whereas I think I, at this point, I start working in London when the next season kind of comes out, and then I've also like my partner did not like me pirating the shows from America to watch them the day after. And when you don't have the rush of going like, well, I know that this airs on Tuesday in the US, so I can watch it Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
It just kind of immediately means that I just lose out on a lot of the stuff that doesn't get UK distribution.
Like being appalled I hadn't seen Broad City, and I'm like, well, I know we have Comedy Central in the UK, but like, that is locked behind a... And I think it's a different version of Comedy Central.
Yeah, I don't think Comedy Central aired Broad City in the UK, even. Like, you, I don't even know what channel you'd have had to watch it.
I think it's all on Netflix or something, so I will definitely watch
it. Yeah, I mean, but there's a thing of, like, the UK, especially in this era in between, where the easiest stuff to watch, and it's why I can't begrudge anyone for falling onto Netflix as, like, a thing. Those shows exist at the same time they exist in the US, and they all exist at the same time. It is kind of like just ease of use.
Yeah.
And it means that you get to have simultaneous like airing with the US. Instead of going like, oh, you know this show review is absolutely terrific, how do I watch it? Well, you need to download a VPN and then like go onto the Comedy Central app and watch it in that way. It's such a fucking bullshit thing that makes it a real hazard to watch like the good stuff. And it's why, I think, for a big reason why like Netflix is the kingmaker now still. Yeah. And still is, even at this point, where it's like being on Netflix means that Wednesday's going to be huge and One Piece will be huge and all these different things, even if that there are less and less quality shows and BoJack Horseman is the best show that they've ever done.
Really. Well, we've been talking about some quite heavy stuff the last few minutes, so let's do something very silly before we get out of here. It's everyone's favorite segment. It's time for the tongue twisters.
Okay.
Do you have your phone on hand?
I've got my phone ready.
Okay, I'll start us off. A real Jill Pill jail fail killer whale caper is pretty good. I would like you to say this.
Oh no. Speaking of paper, Piper Parabo and Paulie Perrette need to push back the pitch on the Princess and the Pauper project.
Very good. And I also like, well, I'm the only albino rhino guy, no, I know. yeah, all good. They're going to get way worse than this as we get Courtney Portnoy in the toilet.
Oh, it's a whole season of Courtney. No, next season is Courtney Portnoy.
I think so, yeah.
Sharon Horgan will have just, I think, Catastrophe started like a year before this. So they're obviously like pulling from that.
I look forward to that next time. But for now, this has been another episode. I thank you for joining us, Benjamin. Thank you for your encyclopedic knowledge, as always.
Thank you for like getting us to do this show, because I'm having a really good time rewatching it.
It's a very good show. So until next time, suck a dick, dumb shits.